thank you for your invitation. Just really to encourage everybody, even if it is difficult the first time, just take your heart in your hands and do it. I think it was today that we were speaking in the Sangha room about inviting, and I remember when I had to do that the first time, very shortly after my Anagarika ordination, I was so self-conscious and so embarrassed that I couldn't bring out anything. I had learned it by heart before, and I was just so nervous. I couldn't remember a word. I couldn't even read it. So that is kind of, I think you call that stage fright. So if that happens to you, you definitely have my empathy. I know how that feels like. So thank you for your courage to just step forward. It's very lovely. So here we are, almost in the middle of it, definitely having been arriving and practicing for 2 whole days. And really experiencing all of it. I mean, I've been asking just before we started with the meditation practice about pain, and I think that is one of the things that we do experience when we are on these retreats. And also really to, I'd like to take the time and the chance to point out, to look at the way how you are spending this time. I mean, I'm quite aware you could be maybe on a holiday in Hawaii or somewhere hiking in the mountains, going for a bicycle tour or whatever else it might be more pleasant than doing what you're doing here. So it's quite a dedication to spend 10 days of your, I assume, quite precious time to look inside and to look at what is going on there. And also to mention, I'm not how much aware you're about that, but when you spend this time on retreat, like on a monastic retreat, following all those precepts that you have been taking on, at least for this period of time, you really get a little bit of an experience of monastic life. And really to, also for yourself, really to while you're there, to respect that. Just a step of, I'm dedicating my time to and let myself into this as fully as I can. So I think that's a very lovely decision, a really, like, a decision where you consciously step into a frame that is asking you to renounce the pleasures that would be available otherwise, and doing that consciously, stepping out of pleasures that could be enjoyed for something else that offers other kind of joys, I would say. I don't want to say pleasures, because retreats are very seldom only blissful and only pleasurable. We do encounter periods of times where there is bliss and where it is very enjoyable, but I don't remember any retreat where there were nothing difficult coming up. And if that would be happening, I would really doubt, what am I actually doing here? So I think looking inside, we do encounter places, spaces, and also energies that might not be so easy to be looked at. It might be something that we have been actually avoiding for quite some time. And usually in those times of retreat, that's for them the time to open up. And for us to maybe to take the chance to look a little bit closer into it, to bring it closer to the heart, to make the space for it, giving the attention that it hadn't got or hasn't got before. And this is why it opens up. Ajahn Amaru in his talk yesterday was mentioning a right attention, a right effort. And in the practice today we have been looking into that. And this is something that quite often gets misunderstood, especially from us Westerners. I think Asian people don't have that problem so much because they grow up in a completely different value system, in a completely different social background. So for them, easefulness and relaxation is usually part of their culture, much more than for us. And right effort is really knowing how much energy, how much attention is needed in this situation. Often we equate that as putting as much energy as possible into it. And I think this goes back to what I just said before, to the background where we are coming from. It's kind of achieving as much as soon as possible. If you relate in that way to the practice, to the meditation practice, I think you will experience a lot of suffering, because this is not the way it works. So finding the right amount of attention, finding the right amount of effort, and applying it carefully into the practice. What is helpful is really to remind ourselves that we start off from a firm foundation, which is again not a forceful one. It's a foundation which comes out of easefulness, which comes out of relaxing into the present moment, connecting with the ground, relaxing into that, and then start off with the practice, whatever your focus is, whatever your practice is, or the method of your practice. But starting with a firm foundation and starting with a relaxed, easeful foundation is very important for the rest of your practice, for that time of sitting or for that time of walking. It also relates to that. Today we have been also looking into, especially in the afternoon, later in the afternoon, looking into working with the Vedana, with the feeling. And again, it goes back to applying the right amount of attention to it, the right amount of effort. We when we look at Vedana, when we look at feeling, then we can recognize three different kinds, as I mentioned before. It's the pleasant feeling, the neutral feeling, and the feeling of aversion, unpleasant feeling. What is quite important to see about this practice is that feeling comes into it, or the Vedana comes into it, in a very very unconceptional way. It is there almost instant. We don't think about it before it comes in. It is an instant relating to a situation, to an instant relating to, like say, to a certain emotion, to a way of thinking, like two thoughts that are coming up, two emotions that we meet. And it is so quick that there's also not a time to think about it, because they get conditioned at other times in our lives. Usually when we experience Vedana, when we experience a certain feeling arising in the mind, they go back to unconscious memories that we have. This is where they can come out of, where this is the way how we relate to a new situation. Often we unconsciously, it does remind us of something that we have experienced before, and instantly there is the conditioning back there, and we relate to it out of that. What you can notice when you see pleasant feeling arising is a reaching out, a wanting more, a feeling of this is pleasant, I like that, I want that. And it's like the mind is reaching out towards it, wanting to grasp it, wanting to hold it, wanting to draw it towards yourself. We usually relate that to the object that the mind is reaching out, that the object that is triggering that feeling in the mind. And we forget to see that what we are actually reaching out for is that pleasant experience inside. What we want more is not really the object, but what we want more is that pleasantness, that easefulness that it brings, or that enticing feeling of the desire that arises with it. That pleasant moment, or that easeful state of mind. Desire can, or pleasant experiences can also be uneaseful. They can be very exciting, and that very excitement can trigger that we want more, because it is interesting, because it is something that is alluring our attention. It's drawing our attention in. And most of the time we do experience that as pleasant. And as I said before, we often forget that it is not the object that we are, that is triggering this feeling, but it is the feeling itself that we are longing for. When we look into the unpleasant experience, like the aversion, we can see an almost opposite movement of the mind. Like the feeling is not of reaching out, it is of rather pushing it away, turning away from it, not wanting it to meet, not wanting this experience to happen to me right now. No thank you, don't want you, no need for more. So it's almost the opposite. And there are different kinds of aversion, different kinds of unpleasant feeling. Like it can be unpleasant feeling in the mind, an unpleasant emotion, or it can be a painful, unpleasant feeling in the body. It can be a very painful, like especially with the practice, we, as I've asked you before, like we can have times where the whole body is starting to ache, and especially some of us might have problems with the back or with the knees, with the hips, or the shoulders. So we do have also physical unpleasant feeling, but usually what is even more difficult to bear with is the unpleasantness in the mind that physical feeling causes. That not really wanting to experience this, wanting it not to be there, wanting it to be otherwise. Experiencing physical pain is something completely natural. We all experience that in our lives, soon or later, and some of us more or less. There's nothing wrong in that. It is unpleasant and it is painful, but there's nothing absolutely wrong, or there's nothing that we can say, well, it should be otherwise. It's like when that happens in the practice, how can we actually relate to that? What I find helpful for myself when I do experience physical pain is looking into the physical sensation of it. Really, it depends if the pain is just light and not very strong and comes and goes. One can just try not to go into it and just ignore it, just noticing, okay, it comes and it goes, but it is not something really serious, and I know that. And there are pains that need more attention, that need to be looked at. And like when those pains are coming, I think it is really good to take that pain as the focus of your meditation. Which means you are looking into it. It's a bit like when we are focusing on the breath. How does the pain unfold? Where does it manifest? What are the physical sensations that go with it? Is it tense? Is it tight? It's the heat. Whatever the sensation might be, we look at it and we are with it. Sometimes it's quite interesting, sometimes just by looking at it, the pain actually might disappear. By giving it attention, by staying with it, by bringing the awareness to it, it might change. Sometimes that, and I have been experiencing that myself in retreats, it's like as soon as you try to focus the attention onto the pain, it actually disappears. Suddenly there is no pain anymore. Another way of working with it is when the pain gets very intense, to imagine you are creating a space around it. So you are not focusing directly into the pain, but you are focusing on the space that is around the pain. And when you look at those edges, at those areas that are close to it, the experience is often that the pain dissipates into it. It is like as if the strength of the pain is diminished by practicing in that way. And sometimes when the pain is too strong, it might help just to move. It might be needed not to sit on the floor anymore, but to move back to a chair, especially if the pain is related to the sitting posture during the meditation practice. But working with pain and using meditation on pain can also be very helpful in times where we experience serious illnesses, where the amount of pain can be quite overwhelming, and even like strong medications might not help to really ease up the pain. And then using awareness practice, using the meditation practice in ways of relating to that pain can help tremendously. Another way of looking at it is also like, who actually is experiencing this pain? A lot of acceleration of pain comes through our not wanting to accept it, not wanting to take it in and wanting it to be otherwise. This feeling of, why me? How come me? How come I experience this pain? If we can let go of that, I think quite a large extent of the pain that you experience will be diminished by that. If you can just stop putting another pain on, like the emotional or mental pain, on top of the physical pain, it will be much more easy to be with that. I mean, it was last year I had a very strong experience in regards to that. I had a gallbladder colic, and it came very unexpected. And at first I thought like I had a food poisoning or something like that. And the pain got stronger and stronger. And as I did not recognize it in the beginning for what it was, I was just kind of applying the practice to it, and actually it was a very interesting experience. It felt like the pain was there, and it was there very strong, but kind of almost like going deeper inside, going beyond the pain, it was actually quite manageable. And what happened to me at that situation was that underneath the pain there was a space which was actually peaceful, where everything was just all right, where however, whatever was going to come, however this was going to unfold, there was an all rightness to it and a peacefulness. And I was myself, I was very surprised about that to be happening, and of course also quite glad to see actually that it helps to apply the practice into the situation, and it does work. I think it's when we give up wanting to change it and just accept it as it is, how it unfolds, and really are determined to be with it. And as I started off from renunciation, this goes, in a way, this goes back to it. Because we do, in that way, we do renounce what we want. We do let go of wanting life to be other, wanting life to be different than what it really is, than how it really unfolds at this time. And a lot of the spiritual practice is about that. It's about being awake, being aware, being with what unfolds. And I'm quite aware that the term renunciation causes maybe for many of you some unpleasant feelings. It often gets equated with something that we should not do, or something we should not feel, we should not, or we should be otherwise. But in my understanding, this is not what it is about. It is really looking at what is essential, what is important, what are my values, or what are the values for this life that I want to look at, that I want to manifest, that I want to live in this life. And what helps me to manifest it, what helps me to live it. And we often forget that actually bringing more simplicity into our lives is what helps with that. I find it quite amazing coming over here from Europe, and again, I mean, it's not the first time that I'm here, it's my second visit to the States, so I find the difference surprising and at the same time striking. And it's like, and it comes up when I think about renunciation, it's like the amount of choices that one comes across is unbelievable at times. It's just like, even as simple as a cup of tea. It's just, I mean, mind-boggling sometimes. I mean, probably especially when you live monastic life and you have what you get, what somebody offers to you. And I definitely don't want to complain, because we are at Amaravati, where I'm living, we are very well supported, and the lay people take really very good care of us. And I don't mean that, but it's more like, when does it start to become really an obstruction? Like, when diversity is expanding into endless choices. I mean, it's almost like you have to struggle through just to have a simple cup of tea. So, and then what does it mean actually for the rest of your life, if it unfolds already with that? And then how can you be really, or how can we, I don't want to say you, how can we really stay focused with what is important, with what is valuable, with what supports us in our practice? And I think in that way, renunciation or the monastic life is incredibly helpful, because it simplifies. Like, say, just very broadly, after midday, no food anymore. So I don't have to think about what I might want to eat in the evening. It's just I know I won't have an evening meal. Maybe if I'm lucky, I have some allowables, like also that what you experience now, chocolate, cheese, these kind of things. But no evening meal. I don't need to think of if I'm going to Italian restaurant or Chinese or whatever. It's just no need to think about it. Frees the mind, bring space, make space for something that is maybe more important. And I'm not saying you all should live on 8 precepts all the time, but it's more like bringing that, what we practice here, into our all-day life experiences. Into applying it into the time afterwards. And I think while you are on retreat, you can actually already look into that. Look at those times when you are not sitting, when you are not walking, and but at those times when you have the meal, when, say, when you do yoga, or when you go for a walk, when you do the work that you, like the chores that you have taken on for the retreat, and see, like, how can I apply mindfulness, direction, clarity into those times? How can that manifest? How much space does it need? It's quite interesting, Ajahn Amaro has been mentioning that before, in the very beginning. Before coming here on the retreat, we were already in California for a little bit more than a week. And it was so incredibly busy. And I wonder if you over here have just another speed. I'm not quite sure. To me, it looks a little bit like that. And I could just feel like how I kind of moved into that. And even being aware about it, it was just very hard to maintain, to maintain a certain attention onto, okay, what is the next step? And not to already look ahead 3 steps further, to, in order to kind of have the overview and kind of reminding myself again and again, okay, what is the next step here? And seeing also when I'm really staying with just now, with this step, or just with the next one, there's more space in the mind. That gives the space that is necessary to stay mindful, to apply the practice. And I assure you, I find it also very difficult. And I think we really need to look at that, how much we want to make that part of our life. And this is where the values come in. And also where renunciation comes in. How can I do that? How can I simplify my life? What is not really necessary? Where do I want to, I don't want to really say cut off from, but step back from is maybe another way of saying that. And of course, these are all just reflections. I think we have to find our own ways of how we can do that, depending on the very situation that you are living in. If you are living family life, or if you have a very busy work life, or maybe both even. So you will need different ways of doing that. But I think it's worthwhile just putting our intention towards that and seeing how much do I actually really want to change, and do I actually want to change? Maybe not. Maybe it's fine to have this intense periods of time of practice, and then we go back into the busyness of ordinary life, and this is just how it is. I personally would not be really satisfied with that. I would more try or turn towards finding a balance between both. I like to end here and offer that as a reflection for this evening, and encouraging you to continue with your practice, and wishing you well. Namayam Dhammagataya Sadhukaram Dadamase Sahara.